Hello and welcome to Channels, the Nextflow podcast. My name is Geraldine. I'm a developer advocate at Sakara Labs, and today I'm joining you from Boston in the US.
Hi everyone, my name is Phil Yules. I'm product manager for open source software at Sakara, and I'm joining you from a very cold and snowy Sweden.
Well, last time we were on a podcast together, we talked a lot about what's been happening in the NFCore community mostly. And so today we're going to talk about how Nextflow itself has been evolving. We'll go over some highlights from 2023, and then we'll talk a bit about what's coming next. So Phil, tell me, what are your favorite features that came out in Nextflow in 2023?
It's a tough one. I think the way we ran over the last episode kind of proves it. The plan was we were going to do NFCore and Nextflow, but got so excited and carried away, we just completely ran out of time. So it's good. This is my mea culpa to sort of make up for that and focus a little bit on Nextflow. So we kind of had a bit of a recap. I'd look over some of the big things that came out last year and some of the stuff we're going forward to next year. Some of these things we have already talked about in previous podcasts, so I'll try and point that out as we go through. I thought it's nice just to do a bit of a step back and think about kind of what's happened and where we're going. And also hats off to Ben, who's featured quite often on this podcast, and we were chatting to him a little bit about some of the major topics that have come out. So this is loosely based actually on his favorite things from 2023, with some stuff added by me. So
and some of the topics have been covered in the podcast in some detail, and so where that's the case, we'll point out in the show notes. We'll link to the relevant episodes.
Yeah. Somewhat confusingly, I'm going to say that probably my top favorite feature for Nextflow in 2023, or certainly the two things that saw the biggest activity, were better support between Nextflow and other tools. And those other tools are other Sakara products which came out and really scaled up in 2023, which were Wave and Fusion. So Wave and Fusion were both kind of announced at the end of 2022 at the Barcelona Summit. That was the first time anyone had heard of them. And during 2023, they were really kind of scaled up, and Nextflow was really improved with how it worked with these tools, because they're custom built really to work with Nextflow.
And maybe for people who aren't completely familiar with everything Sakara does yet, can you give us a quick elevator pitch on what Wave and Fusion are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can chuck my screen up. You go to Sakara website, you can kind of see the nice shiny pages talking about them a little bit. But basically, Wave is a tool for working with software image containers. So it builds containers on the fly. So you just say, I want to run with, I don't know, MultiQC, for example, or some other kind of tool which is on Conda, or you have a Docker file or whatever. And you don't have to think about pushing to a registry first. You just run your Nextflow pipeline with the Conda declaration, you know, Conda, SAM tools. But Nextflow then will tell Wave, which is a service running elsewhere at Sakara, that you need this. Wave will build that image for you on the fly using Conda and then serve it back. And so you can still run with Singularity, native Singularity builds, or Docker, or any of the other container technologies without having to mess around thinking about that. And because it's doing it on the fly, it can do clever stuff with like authenticating to private image repositories and a bunch of other stuff. And we have quite a lot of other things that benefit from the behavior of Wave that are coming along. One really clever thing it can do is it can augment existing images. So it can take an image that you've taken from anywhere, it can be built by Wave or it can come from a registry. And then it can kind of, without actually modifying the Docker file in the build, it can just add in extra stuff to that image on the fly. And that leads me nicely onto Fusion. So one of the things it can do is it can add in the Fusion binary, which is this other tool that we've developed, which is for working with, it's basically a lightweight file system. So basically, if you're working on the cloud, especially, you can just mount S3 buckets as a regular local file system, which other tools let you do that already, like FSx for Lustre, Mount Point and other things. But Fusion does it very, very fast, and it can make a bunch of things because it knows how Nextflow is working, especially. It can do a bunch of really clever things to make that super fast.
Yeah. And so the idea there is, as I understand it, is that way you don't have to localize files, right? So if I have my genome sequencing data in a bucket, normally I would have to localize, so copy that over to the working virtual machine. But now I don't have to do that, right?
Exactly, yeah. So Nextflow did that for you already. So as an end user, you don't really see much difference. So previously what happens is you give it a work directory in a bucket and Nextflow copies the files for that task off the bucket onto your local EBS disk if you're running on AWS, and then runs it. And when it's finished, it copies those output files back to S3. Fusion is doing the same thing. It just does it basically on demand much, much faster and only takes the data that it actually needs at any given time.
And the speed there really matters, because it's true. I mean, you don't technically have to explicitly do a copy command. That's handled for you. But the amount of time that it takes, if we're talking about very large files like genome sequencing data, that ends up cutting time out, and that ends up, if you're working on the cloud, that ends up also reducing your bill at the end of the day, right?
Exactly, which is speed and cost are pretty motivating factors. So then we had when it was announced, I mean, if you go back to the talks from the summit at summit.nextflow.io, you can see Paolo's talk where he has lots of benchmarks, and there's this blog post as well where you can sort of see that Fusion is just like way faster. It's kind of 2.25 times faster than not using Fusion. So and that's on NF-Core RNA-Seq, so that's like a real life example.
Nice. And that's supported across the various cloud providers, right?
It is, yeah. So Amazon and Google and Microsoft as well.
Nice.
So a bit strange to start off not really talking about Nextflow, but one of the big things for 2023 for Nextflow was, because these products really kind of are so tight-knit, there's been a lot of support to add in Fusion support into Nextflow.
I think it's fair. If it makes your experience of running Nextflow pipelines easier and better, I think it qualifies.
Yeah, and right. Cheaper, hopefully, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool.
And I was going to, we did talk about it. I think we talked about it a little bit way back in May. I think I was trying to find a podcast for each one of these topics. So we did talk a little bit about it then. So you can go back and check that episode.
Nice. All right.
So next,
Fusion Wave. What's next? What's your number 2/3? I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're counting these.
Now we're going back to February 2023, episode 12, where Chris and Marcel. This is back when I was on paternity leave. Chris and Marcel were talking about this one, and this is SPAC. So, if anyone not familiar with SPAC, it's a package manager, very similar to Conda, where people can package software onto a SPAC registry, and you can do SPAC install. I can never actually find it. Something like registry.spac.io or something. Packages? No. Anyway, this is SPAC. It's very commonly used in HPC for kind of not necessarily biochemistry and bioinformatics, more kind of some of the other sciences, but it's kind of coming over towards bioinformatics more and more, and has some nice things about it. It's very good at dealing with multiple architectures, for example, and there's these binary caches where everything is pre-compiled and it's very quick to get. So HPC admins really like it, and it seems to be growing in support. And basically now Nextflow and also Wave will deal with SPAC just as it would with Conda or anything else. You can just, there's a SPAC declaration for processes, so you just say SPAC, use these tools.
Nice.
Which is very nice, especially for anyone using Nextflow in other scientific fields where SPAC is used a lot more commonly.
That makes sense. Yeah, I had never heard about it in bioinformatics, but as Nextflow expands to other domains, we need to accept
those. There's two directions, because SPAC is also expanding into bioinformatics. So excited to see some of the stuff we can build off that.
Indeed. All right. Packaging, what's next?
Next up, I had a topic close to my heart, this one. Markdown.
Markdown. I remember seeing that like at the quiz at the hackathon in Barcelona, the question of, there was a question about the Markdown syntax, and I was like, really? I know that one. That was one of the only questions I could answer, actually, at the Barcelona one.
We talk about writing Nextflow code and I don't know what else, Python and any other languages you need for bioinformatics, but Markdown's probably one of the first ones.
But which
just in case there's anyone listening who has no idea what I'm talking about, Markdown is what you write when you write GitHub issues or anything like that, and it's used for markup, text markup for most things on the internet. There are different flavors of writing, and it's used for documentation a lot. There are different flavors of kind of this markup languages, and the one that the Nextflow documentation had been using is called RST, rich syntax text. No, someone's going to tell me I'm wrong. I can't remember what RST stands for now.
Sounds about right.
Anyway, and RST has been around for ages. It's used a lot in the Python community for Sphinx documentation packaging, but it's different to Markdown. And personally, I dislike it. I find it really difficult to write because I write loads of Markdown and almost no RST, and I found it a real blocker every time I came to do anything with the Nextflow documentation. Yeah. And actually, as part of a wider, we kind of did a review of all the different mini sites around Nextflow. All of NF Core is Markdown, but then the training was ASCII doc, and the Nextflow docs were RST. And so we've slowly tried to, over 2023, rewrite or port a lot all this material so we're just Markdown everywhere, which is a massive effort again by Ben. So hats off to him.
Yeah, no, that's I love Markdown. It's got that mix of simplicity and like you can do pretty much anything you need with very basic symbols. It's great. Yeah.
And I didn't mention it on I didn't think about it, but also related to that with the Nextflow docs, we've also got slightly nicer styling, and there's been a lot of work on the Nextflow documentation in 2023. All pretty minor stuff, and there's a lot more to do and a lot more to come. But we're definitely making big steps in the right direction with the docs, I hope.
Yeah. One of the things I'm looking forward to is consolidating kind of Nextflow docs and NF Core docs, because there's a little bit of like overlap and interesting little gaps between them. That's one of the things we'll be looking at.
I mean, but with the Nextflow docs, there hasn't really been a home for some of the more kind of tutorial based stuff, so we like with many features, we stick stuff in NF Core that we just want right now. But hopefully that can kind of graduate to a more central location for all Nextflow users. That would be nice.
Sounds about right. All right. And there's been an episode where you've mentioned that, right?
Yeah, I just closed the tab. I've forgotten what episode 14. Yeah. We talked about it a bit more. Yeah. Just more of me being excited about Markdown.
Well, your enthusiasm is, you know, communicative. It's good. It's all good. All right. Well, this is some nice features and evolutions. What's next on your list of things you're excited about from 2023?
Yeah. So those first three are kind of more the first half of 2023. And if there's regular listeners to the podcast, like I say, we've talked about them before and might be a bit more familiar with them. The next three I've got are bit newer and maybe not so familiar with people. The first one I put up is a new subcommand actually for Nextflow. You have Nextflow run, which is the one that everyone uses all the time. Maybe you use Nextflow log, Nextflow cleanup, things like that. But there's a new one now called Nextflow inspect. And this came about mostly through some really persistent lobbying by Harshal in the NF Core community. Also me and a whole bunch of other people actually have been asking for something like this for a long time. One of the things that we end up doing and others as well, we use containers a lot, right, in Nextflow pipelines. So the RNA-seq pipeline has somewhere in the region of 50 to 60 different processes, and each one of those has a different image, container image, be it Fast QC or Multi QC or SAM tools or whatever. And for example, in NF Core, we have a command called NF Core download, which finds all of those containers and downloads the singularity images for you. There's other use cases, especially with Wave, where you want to get all of those container URLs where they might be difficult to get otherwise. And various other use cases. And if you start looking around the internet for long enough, you'll find different pieces of code written by people generally which have lots of regular expressions trying to pass this out of a code, and it's hacky and it's fragile and it breaks all the time. So what Nextflow inspect does, you run Nextflow inspect and then the pipeline name, as you would just switch out run and inspect, and it basically goes through the pipeline as if it was running it, goes through every single process and looks at what the container should be, including if it's dynamically resolved, and then spits out a big old JSON object. Nice. With a list of all the different processes, with their kind of identifiers as you would have in a config, and any containers used by them. So this is great.
That's brilliant. I didn't know about it. I learned. That's really convenient, though. I mean, because otherwise, if you had to do that manually, it'd be a nightmare.
Been there.
I mean, I've been there for, you know, stuff in other languages. But yeah, no, this is very cool. I like it.
Yeah, and of course, the beauty of it coming out in JSON is you can pipe it to, like, I guess many people will be familiar with a command line tool called JQ, which is just a fantastic little utility tool for working on JSON on the command line. So with like a few little kind of tweaks there, you can get it in basically any format. You can pipe it into anything else. So we're now using that in NFCore tools to have a much more robust way to fetch containers, and you'll see it in more and more places, especially as we start to use Wave more often.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
Yep.
All right. Inspect. All right. Next topic, if I dare say so.
Let's see what you did there.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Next one, new feature called Topics. Nextflow channel topics.
Yes.
I can't remember if we've talked about this before in a podcast or not. I have a sneak feeling I might have talked to Ben about it at some point at the end of last year, but I couldn't find a podcast. So I'm going to assume that I haven't spoken about this before and no one knows what I'm talking about. Let's take an example of the two big ones in NFCore. We have software versions and we have multi-QC outputs. Software versions, especially every single process in an NFCore pipeline spits out some output about the version of the software that was used so that we can report on it. And it always comes from the actual software itself in case it's overwritten in a config file or anything. And so that means we have an output channel for every single process. And then we have a process at the end which collects all of those and reports on it. And that input for that channel is huge, for that process is huge, because you've got, like, if you've got 50 different processes, you've got 50 different input channels. And it works and it's fine, but the syntax is kind of, it's verbose. And so the idea behind channel topics then is it's a new syntax that came out in 23.11 Edge. So it's in the new stable release, 23.12. And when you declare an output, so in the process output block, you can define the output channel, and then you can give it this topic keyword, and then you follow that with any string you like. So in the docs, the example is my underscore topic, but you can call it whatever. So you can call it versions in my example, or if it's a multi-QC output, you could call it multi-QC log or whatever. And it can be a value, or it can be a file, or it can be anything. Then the magic comes when you come to use this as an input channel somewhere. So right at the end of your pipeline, when you're scooping all of these up, you have a new channel factory called channel.topic. And so as an input, you say channel.topic, and then you use that label, and Nextflow will scoop together everything it can find, which is outputting with that topic label. And so in this example, we're just passing that to view, but you can imagine how that could be an input to another process.
So the word topic here functions kind of like tag, sort of a tagging system to be able to group things together. Yep. Okay. Can you only put a single topic on a channel, or can you have multiple topics? Like, if I were tagging things, I might want to tag one thing with two different tags.
I'm not 100% sure. I think you can, but.
Sorry for the unplanned question.
don't blame me if you try it and it breaks. we should probably add this. It's one of these things like, yeah, I don't know. We should add this to the documentation. I'm not sure off the top of my head. I think you can, but I'm not certain.
It's pretty neat. I feel like it's one of those things where the terminology is a little bit, maybe not the most descriptive, but once you wrap your head around what it does, it's really cool.
Exactly. And you know, I think it will probably start finding its way into templates and other things. Mm-hmm. So it will start to be in code that you read elsewhere, if nothing else.
And once it's part of the jargon, then it's.
It's mostly a convenience function. Like, as the docs say, everyone's already doing this with the mix operator. It's basically the same thing, but it's just cutting down on some of the kind of code duplication.
Cool.
So, nice little one.
Nice topic. Sorry. Can't help it. All right. So moving on, I think we have one more feature for 2023 before we move on to 2024.
Yeah.
What's last on your list, which is a bad way.
Snuck in just at the end, yeah. This is a cloud-specific one. If you're on HPC and you don't care about cloud, you can tune out for a couple of minutes. A bit of background on AWS specifically. Most people run Nextflow using AWS Batch, which is a job scheduler, basically, where jobs are kind of, you have the Nextflow head job, which sits there running and it submits jobs and they get sent off to AWS Batch, which then spins up instances to run the pipeline for you. Mm. Now, most people do kind of batch squared, it's often called, or AWS batch on batch, which basically means you have an AWS batch queue, which runs the Nextflow head job, and then another queue for the jobs themselves. So this means in secure platform, or if you're running manually, when you launch the Nextflow pipeline, you sit there for like 3-4 minutes waiting because a job is kicked off to AWS batch, and then AWS batch spins up an EC2 instance for you, pulls the Docker image, gets everything there, and then Nextflow starts running. And it works fine. But AWS released yet another new feature. It's like this huge catalog of things that they have. But there's one which is called AWS Fargate. And Fargate is a serverless functionality. So it works kind of the same idea, except that when you send it a job to run in a container, it doesn't have to spin up a new EC2 instance, which means it's much, much faster to run. Instead of taking like 3 or 4 minutes to launch, now it takes like 20 to 30 seconds. And basically, one of the things that we added was the ability for Nextflow to run on AWS Fargate. And you can see we've got a blog post on the Sakura blog about this at the end of October. And this is kind of a small, Fargate is a bit more expensive than Batch, but for running the head job, it makes a fairly small amount of difference. And this, because it cuts off the startup time, it's kind of a nice convenience thing. So you can see in Secure Platform is now a tick box saying enable Fargate for head job.
Interesting. Does that come with any limitations on the compute power or like the size of the job you can run?
This specifically here is this blog post is talking about the head job. Where we don't really care about compute power. It doesn't really matter very much because we're still kicking the actual compute jobs off to AWS batch. So this particular feature is all about faster pipeline starts, which is a really important thing because we run pipeline validation and a bunch of other stuff happens right at the start of when you launch pipeline. So it's nice to know within 20 seconds that you got something wrong in your config instead of waiting 5 minutes.
so this is kind of an optimization to fail early if you're going to fail.
Yeah.
To save time on failure. But if things work out, it wouldn't make a huge amount of difference.
I mean, it depends on how long the job is and everything, really.
I'm thinking about genomics pipelines that run for a few hours or stuff like that.
If you're running for hours or days, it's not going to make a massive difference to the end of your...
Not as much for production, but a lot more relevant for testing, maybe, where you're... Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, like when you're initially testing, like developing a new pipeline and doing a lot of tests, if it eats 3 to 4 minutes every time you want to test something, that can prolong your development time, but if you can shrink that down...
Okay. So tighten the circle. And also there's a lot of people I tend to think of production equals automation, so obviously big sites are kicking off many jobs and not looking at them when they're being kicked off. But there's still loads of people in smaller groups who run a pipeline manually. If you ever launch a pipeline manually, then it just makes your life a bit better.
Yeah. I have to admit that I'm slightly biased by the my origins.
Running at scale.
Running at scale is kind of the thing that, we used to do a lot.
Yeah. You've got to think of a little guy still.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
And there's a pretty good chance it will come to compute jobs as well. I can't actually remember where we are on that. But then that will impact production run speeds as well, especially if you have jobs which are quite quick to run, for example. I always use multi-QC for obvious reasons. Like multi-QC will often run in about 30 seconds to a minute. And so if your startup and wind down time on a batch instance is like 5 minutes either side, then then that makes a big difference to price. Yeah. And if you have a lot of jobs in your pipeline which are quick, then serverless is going to
be. So is that something that you can configure like per task, per process, so that you can say, this is a super short running process, I want to run it on Fargate, but this thing is a super long one, so I want to keep the lower cost option for the long running jobs? Or
as far as I remember, hopefully Ben won't tell me I'm wrong about this, I don't think you can do it right now for compute on Nextflow, so no. This is mostly a head job thing, and it's mostly Nextflow plus Segura Tower platform. Sorry.
Maybe in the future?
I was going to say that we'll tackle that question in 6 months' time on the podcast and come back to it.
Fair enough. I just want to run ahead. I'm just excited about it.
And that's my 2023.
That's a pretty good rundown of what happened in 2023. Obviously, a lot happened, and that's the highlights, right? But that's a very good summary, I think, for anybody who hasn't been following that closely. So now let's move on to the new year, 2024. We're still allowed to talk about it as the new year because it's still January, barely, but still, I think it's allowed. Anyway, 2024. What's coming next?
Yeah, and this it's a kind of a smooth transition for me as well, because some of these things I'm going to mention, again, we've talked in previous podcast episodes about, because they've been brewing for a while. And so I've focused on the previous topics of things which are done, which are merged, which are released already and you can use today. But many of these things, the bulk of the work has happened in 2023, and hopefully it's going to be an exciting first quarter or half a year for 2024 as all these things actually start shipping.
Do we have a timeline for the next release?
Yeah, so Nextflow stable releases come out twice a year. So we had one 2312, so the next one will be around April May, I think, if I
remember. And just May. This is a really dumb question, but the version was 23 dot something, does that have to do anything with the year, or is it just a coincidence?
It does. Let me find you a blog post.
Okay.
So for old versions of Nextflow, where is it? I haven't done it. I should have prepped this blog post in advance. Somewhere, yeah, I can't find it.
Don't worry. Just give us the.
Yeah, if you go back far enough to Nextflow versions, they're like version 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. Up to about version 30-ish. I remember when I started using Nextflow, it was like version 18, 19, something like that, and it went up to 30s. And then especially as the kind of more and more enterprise users started hitting Nextflow and stability became a lot more important, it wasn't just academic research groups anymore. And the model changed to have this system of having stable releases and edge releases. And so there is a predictable release schedule now, and version numbers are based not on numerically, but based on the date. So it's yeah.
So 2311 something is November 2023.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly. So it's kind of handy because you look at a version number and you can see immediately how old it is without having to go back to the GitHub release changelog and be like, oh, that version's 4 years old.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
So then, yeah, it's not semantic versioning anymore. It's year, month, and then it counts up. So we're actually on 23.12.1 now. I think, or 23.11.1. No, so we had a patch release the other day, basically. Yeah. And then the Edge releases come out, and they have the same kind of format, but they have Edge, and they are typically not used so much for production usage, but they come out about once a month-ish.
And for the versions that come out twice a year, I assume it's fair to say, like, every time it's a major version release, basically, if we were to compare it to a semantic versioning system.
Yeah, I mean, there's no kind of strict system about what constitutes a breaking change and things, but yeah, I mean, basically the major releases scoop up everything that's come out in the past 5, 6 Edge releases, and goes out, and there'll often be quite major changes.
Okay.
So cool. Definitely following the stable release schedule is a good idea.
Maybe.
There is a blog post about it somewhere, but it's quite a few years old now. I couldn't find it in time.
Maybe we'll do one.
I'll stick it in the show notes if we find it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Job arrays.
Yes.
It's the first one I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to try and link to the issues and pull requests as I go along here. So you can, if you're listening to this in a few months' time, you can go and check it out and see pull request number 3892 and see if it's been merged. but I've definitely talked to this, to talk to Ben about this. I think it was episode 15. We covered a whole load of stuff, and one of them was job arrays. And job arrays then is submitting multiple jobs to the scheduler in one go. So you, if you have like 20 small jobs, then they can be given to the scheduler in one go, and the scheduler is much happier. So if you're running with Slurm or something, if you try and spit like a million jobs at Slurm, it will just fall over. It just won't work. Whereas if you support task arrays, then you can support, you know, 1,000 batches, 1,000 kind of groups of arrays.
And in this context, because these words are used a little bit differently in different workflow manager, you know, frameworks and communities, jobs here is an instantiation of like one process, one task.
I'm being a bit sloppy here, but jobs and tasks are usually used interchangeably. One process may yield many tasks. Tasks is the proper Nextflow term.
Okay, good. That's the same in another system that I'm familiar with. It's helpful when it's the same words that mean the same thing.
Jobs is a bit more fluffy, but generally arrays is a specific word and task is a specific word.
Okay.
So this is basically written. It's just waiting for final review and merge. Should be out any day now. And it's a new directive into processes. So you say array, and then you can sort of say how many jobs should be stuck together in one array. So this is, again, particularly good for people outside of bioinformatics, maybe, or kind of outside of genomics, maybe, where you have many, many small jobs. So material sciences, or I think proteomics is a good use case, and a whole bunch of others.
And when the PR is merged, you'll be able to say, hooray! Sorry, I'm practicing my terrible puns.
I was going to say, you're going to start a Nextflow stand-up soon.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to kill it.
And that's not to be confused with another feature, which is also coming up hopefully in 2024, but I'm not quite confident enough to put it on the list specifically, which is task batching. And batching is a bit more complex. Batching doesn't just submit lots of jobs, because when the arrays are still like specific jobs on the individual jobs on the scheduler, but task batching is putting many Nextflow tasks into one scheduler job. So that's really cool.
There was a reference to that, I feel like, in one of the optimization blog posts. That was really interesting. It's something I hadn't. It was referred to as task packing. Is that a difference? Or the idea being that, like when you have, especially when you work on the cloud, you have one task that you send to one virtual machine, right? VM. And so, but if you have a lot of small tasks, you end up paying a lot of overhead for tiny little things, spinning up a whole VM for a tiny task. And the idea, as I understood it, was like send a bunch of tasks together. So even though from the point of view of the workflow, they're separate, you would pack them together into a job to run on that same VM, to kind of optimize the way you and minimize the overhead. Is that
exactly? Yeah. And you look at other workflow managers, especially those used a bit more in like ML and stuff. They're much more optimized for running millions of very small tasks, and this is kind of commonplace. But Nextflow has come from the world of genomics. We're much more used to smaller numbers of jobs that run for hours. And it's never been such a priority, but when task batching comes in, it should make us much more, Nextflow a much better tool for those fields which are doing millions of tiny jobs.
But it's
quite complex to build, so that's why I'm not quite confident to put it in my 2024 hit list, because hopefully it will happen. But
interesting, cool.
Next one is one of my favorites. And I'm super excited about it. I found this issue. I'll show you how I found this issue. If you go to Nextflow issues and you go all the way to the back, and it's the oldest open issue.
Oh, wow.
number 452 from 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This one came from Andreas, who was at the time was in Singapore working at A-Star GIS, where this is around the time actually we started. I went and visited him, and we started NF Core. Yeah, basically asking for when you run a Nextray pipeline, you have all the work directories with all the intermediate files stored there as you go along. And when the pipeline is finished, then you've saved all your outputs with published dir to a different location. Then you can wipe out the work directory, and that's fine. But if you have massive jobs, massive workflow pipelines, that work directory can get really, really big. And sometimes that's enough of a problem that it stops you from running your pipeline. If you only have like X amount of space on your shared file system, and the work directory is bigger than that, then the pipeline will never finish. And it's quite difficult to work around that. Over the years, various different workarounds have been proposed, even pipelines kind of built specifically to kind of tackle this issue. And actually Ben Sherman, who's been on the podcast a lot, before he was working at Secure on Nextflow, he was actually heavily involved in working on this problem as well. So it's been coming for years and years and years, and is actually now in a draft pull request since last year, and I'm hoping we might see it merged and see it come out in 2024.
And here, if I understand correctly, you're talking about deleting things while the pipeline is still running. So,
correct.
Okay, because I'm familiar with systems that, like, once everything is done, you delete intermediate files and things like that. But this is really meant like on while you're still running it live.
Yeah. So I mean, you can already automatically clean up the work directory. There's a Nextflow config option called clean up true, mm-hmm. where it will just wipe out the work directory if the pipeline finishes successfully. But this is, as you say, as it goes along while it's still running, any work directories which are no longer needed, any task mm-hmm. outputs which are no longer needed, are deleted off the file system.
Okay.
This is difficult because Nextflow needs to know whether it needs those outputs or not.
Yeah.
And so much of what Ben has done here is not so much deleting files and stuff, which is easy. It's improving how the Nextflow yeah. cache and the logic works to be yeah. sure that, okay, all the downstream tasks which depend on this directory have finished yeah. running and gone on to the next one. So therefore this one, which is now yeah. two steps back, can be removed.
I mean, because conceptually you should be able to tell from the graph that you build at the beginning, right?
But you don't build the graph at the beginning with Nextflow. You build a graph as you go along.
Oh.
Which is one of the key differences between Nextflow and other workflow managers.
I see. Oh, okay. What's the advantage of doing it that way?
Almost instant startup time, because you don't have to sit and work out a DAG for millions and millions of tasks. Oh. And also you can respond to logic as you go along. So if you have a result which looks particularly crappy, you can drop it out halfway through or fork or do whatever other kind of logic.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, when you have to have everything resolved from the beginning, you get into some funny situations with accounting for if this or that happens. Interesting. Okay. Sorry.
So again, Ben and I, if we want a deep dive on this, Ben and I talked about both these in episode 15, and he really went into details about how it works, which is quite interesting. But my hope is it will actually be, it's one of the most requested things. It comes up all the time. So now I'm just pointing people to this pull request. I'm like, go and follow that pull request and you'll be notified when it's merged.
I have to admit, it makes me nervous, because if the pipeline fails for some other thing, like usually you want to be able to resume from point of failure. So if you delete stuff, then you might not be able to do that, right?
In principle, it doesn't break resume, because you only delete once the tasks which rely on it are finished. Nice. So resuming, it should be able to go, okay, it's fine. This we got as far as this task, and all those ones weren't needed, so we don't need.
Oh yeah, and you're already at the next step in the thing, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously it is a bit risky, because if you break the ability for Nextflow to resume early on somehow.
Yeah, because one of the things that I like to be able to do is modify my pipeline and like, or maybe change the version of the container I use for one of the steps. And so it's not because of a failure, but because of a change. And so you go back in time, but you're still able to reuse the cached results from the beginning of the pipeline where nothing has changed. And so you resume from point of change, I should say.
Yeah. So then this will break that.
So we'll break
which is why it won't be switched on by default.
Okay, that's fair.
But it's a feature which enables people to run pipelines where otherwise they can't run them at all. So
yeah, if they have
kind of a sacrifice you have to make.
That's fair. Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So
So there's that one. What about I'm not quite doing this in chronological order. But okay. The next one is actually on the verge of being emerged. I wasn't sure if it'd be emerged before we got to this podcast. but it's, again, episode 15, it was a good one. We talked about this one as well, which is version 2 of a command line interface for Nextflow. Obviously a pretty big change. Mm. The old command line interface isn't going away, at least not straight away. This is a new command, so you'll be able to launch Nextflow using NF instead of Nextflow.
Oh, nice.
And basically, one of the big things that people struggle with when they're starting with Nextflow is the kind of the way that the CLI works. So at the moment, you launch Nextflow and it has core options like resume, for example, which use a single hyphen. And then you have parameters in the pipeline which use double hyphen. And double hyphen foo ends up being params.foo in the workflow. Mm-hmm. Super powerful, and it really enables massive customization and it's nice developer experience. But it's really frustrating if you want to resume your pipeline and you do --resume when it should just be --resume. because then it ends up being params.resume and your pipeline doesn't resume. It's really irritating. We actually have automated checks for some of this now via the NF validation plugin, but still, this kind of an unintuitive CLI for people who are not used to running Nextflow. And for a long time, people have been saying, can we not use convention? So version 2 of this CLI does use convention. You've got the normal short and long options, and it kind of behaves a lot more like you would expect it to, basically.
I remember going through a big overhaul of the GHK command line interface as well. Also the same idea of just making, enforcing conventions for argument names and stuff like that. In our case, there was a little bit more focus on, you know, nicknames, short names and long names, stuff that was in camel case versus snake case versus also kebab case, apparently it was called, when you have just dashes between where. Anyway, it was a little bit traumatic to upgrade the CLI. There was a lot of angst around that.
Breaks a lot of people's workflows.
It does. But if you give a long enough period of deprecation where the old thing still works, hopefully that should be okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And especially at the start, the idea is to put out this new CLI, let people use it and kind of collect feedback and iterate a little bit at the start. And we're not committing to anything at this point. We'll see how it goes. Yeah. But if people much prefer it, then the logical path will be to slowly adopt that as the main default. We'll start training people to use that instead and everything else. And then eventually the old CLI will crumble and die.
Oh, yeah. We have to update all the training material. Thanks, Phil.
it'll make it easier to teach.
Oh, people, so that's not your problem anymore, is it?
Okay. All right. I'm going to sneak another one in here. I didn't plan it, but I'm going to chuck it in anyway because it's my pull request and I can. it's the only one I'm going to talk about where I've done anything. But I've been playing around with a little toy thing here, which is anyone who's listened to me talk long enough will know that I love a bit of color in my terminal. And so I'm working on a pull request to add color and nice things to the Nextflow output on the CLI.
That's fun.
Which small things, but I will be very personally happy when this, goes in, if it gets accepted by everybody.
Will we be able to do custom themes?
I hadn't thought about it, but now you're just baiting me.
Maybe a little.
So there's a few things here. It does colors, so it's just a bit easier to scan. You can pull out, this is slightly outdated now actually. There we go, this is the latest version. So you can sort of see the labels very easily. And you can see, you know, when things are finished, it goes green. So it's just a bit easier to scan quickly. And there's some other stuff as well, like when the names are very long, Often you get kind of truncated and you just get the start of all of them, which, and the start is always the same. You can see it's just the workflow names. So I've changed that. So now it gets truncated from the other end. So you see the bit that is actually different.
Interesting.
I think I've got this in a video up here, which will be hopefully kind of nice for people.
Are you putting it in any highlighting that would make it easier to debug things as well?
So error log messages already come out red.
Okay.
So probably not going to change anything there. It's nice. Mostly just for the ANSI logging to monitor progress.
Not going to be like different colors for different kinds of errors, like user error versus like if you screwed up your inputs versus like this argument doesn't exist or this other no. Sorry, now I'm just wildly.
No. It's just errors and warnings. Errors are red, warnings are yellow. I'm not changing anything. I'm just sticking with the default.
Okay, fair enough.
It's open source, Geraldine. You can add whatever code you want in the pull request.
You know, I might. I might have a few other priorities first. Cool. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Next up,
three more. These ones, so the last three we'd all talked about previously with Ben in episode 15. These ones I couldn't find anything about in previous podcasts. And apologies if I have been covered before. First one is to do with how you install Nextflow. And this is also getting a bit further off. Those past three have all got open pull requests, which are currently under review and hopefully will be kind of in pretty soon. These three are a bit more vague. And it's very much more still in the planning stage. But the first one, is about packaging. And this sits in an issue at the moment, which you can talk, it's quite a long discussion about it. And basically the idea is to try and make installation of Nextflow a bit easier. Nextflow is written in Groovy, which is based on Java. So you have to install Java. Which is not always an entirely painless experience, as I'm sure you're probably aware. JDK is probably similar.
Major minor version issue, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
Oh,
and Nextflow uses this kind of capsule system to fetch all the assets and everything. And generally it works pretty well, but we think we can make it better. So there's some different ideas. I'm probably going to drop that old capsule package system and hopefully have a kind of a standalone Nextflow distribution runtime. Potentially even as like a binary that ships with the JVM, so you don't need to have Java installed. That might be quite nice. Mm-hmm. We just need to make sure that stuff like plugins will still work seamlessly and various other things. That's quite a lot further off. There's also, you can see a bunch of other issues linked to in that one. This one is about the native package distribution, which is self-contained with, maybe one for every different operating system because the JVM's a cross-platform. So we'll see if something happens there. But, installation is such an important step. If people try and install Nextflow and can't get it working in the first 5 minutes, half an hour, you know, it's so easy to just be like, oh, I'm going to walk away. the easier we can make that, the better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes. There's a few things that we can improve also in how we document the installation. If you look at nextflow.io and fcore, the installation instructions are not the same. And to get it to work, you need a mix of both. So we'll be fixing that soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That might actually be my first PR contribution to something if I get around to it. It's
definitely good to have a fresh set of eyes come in and spot that kind of thing.
I don't know anything hat on. It's very helpful to spot these things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. What's next?
Next, what? Two more. Very tightly. It's one more, really. Mm-hmm. It's about configuration. And two different aspects of configuration. And again, it's under heavy discussion at the moment, so it's very uncertain about how this is going to end up, but it's quite interesting, I think, to see how we can improve this. Starting off we're talking a little bit about workflow, how workflow inputs and outputs are declared. So at the moment, Nextflow is, really goes back to when Nextflow was DSL1 and you just had this big long script and it ran. And then with DSL2, everything started to become encapsulated within these workflows, which, you know, you have a workflow declaration within your script, and you can have multiple sub workflows which kind of are nested and everything. Mm-hmm. And workflows can take inputs and emit outputs, which you need to do if you're kind of chaining them together. But the top level workflow doesn't really need to do that. And we would like to tighten up a little bit how these inputs and outputs are defined. And an important part of this is looking how the NF Core schema, or which is now the Nextflow schema, really, as part of the NF validation plugin, how that's being used. We added that in NF Core to add in features that we felt were missing in Nextflow, such as type safety. So you can say this input parameter should be a Boolean, true, false. This one is a number. This one's a string. This one should match this regular expression. So some functionality like that. And we'd like to sort of try and combine all of these different sources of truth into one source of truth, basically, and have better defined inputs and outputs. This will hopefully make life easier as a pipeline developer, because you only have to declare your thing in one place, which is better, of course, other than trying to remember to add it to the schema as well and keep them up to date and everything. Also, if we have better defined inputs and outputs, the hope is we can start to chain pipelines a lot more effectively. If we actually know, like, okay, these are the outputs from this pipeline run. This is what they were. This is what they looked like. If they're files, this is where they were. If they were values, this is what the values were. So I think that will be an important key to opening up that whole field of chaining pipelines, which is a really high priority for us. Yeah, and so this is, as with everything else, sat in an issue, 4669. This one Ben only opened 2 days ago. He spun it off from another one. we're having quite a long, interesting discussion on this original one. You can join in and jump in and share your thoughts with us, because it's very much in that kind of discussion, throwing ideas around stage at the moment. But you can see that Ben's put the priorities here of what we're thinking about are a single source of truth, less ambiguity about how params are resolved, because at the moment they can come in at kind of module level, workflow level, config level. They come in from all over the place, and it can be difficult to track which one gets priority and where they come from. So if we're a bit more strict about how inputs and outputs flow, it should make that a lot clearer. And then, yeah, we can do better sort of stuff like type definition and things. And yeah, like, as with many other things, there are other workflow managers which tackle this in different, potentially better ways. So looking elsewhere a bit about
it's how good to
solve the same problem.
Yeah, to look at how exactly other systems solve things, and imitation is the most sincere form of flattery.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Good.
Take what works. So yeah, I think that's in a very open stage, and whether we actually wrap this into a proper spec and figure out what to do and actually implement it all within a year, we'll see, hopefully. But I think it will be a really important driver behind a lot of other things that we can then bring in hot on the tails of that. Which sort of ties me into where that came from. I've done it a bit in reverse order, but this big issue that Paolo started back in 2022 to kind of discuss evolution of the Nextflow configuration file. And really, the Nextflow config files are this kind of double-edged sword, where Nextflow config files are really just a groovy script. And so if you look at the one that ships with the NF Core template, it's got a function sat at the bottom, like an actual programming function, which we call in the config file, which is a bit unconventional for config files. And you can see all kinds of stuff like that lurking in various config files all over the place. Makes them very powerful, but makes them also complex, difficult to maintain. And one of the things which is a real struggle is it also makes it very difficult for anything apart from Nextflow to load the config file. It really is part of a pipeline code almost. You need to kind of context of everything. And that's a pain when you want to build any systems around Nextflow. And was part of the motivation for the Nextflow schema, which is a JSON file, which we can use then to render documentation on the website and launch interfaces and various other things. And so this long, long issue, we're batting around ideas for different ways, different formats that we could adopt for the config file. Like, should we use YAML or TOML or HashiCorp HCL or this or that? And we haven't really come to a conclusion yet, but some really good discussions going on there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the overall kind of overarching thing is that it should be slightly better defined, still be human readable, still allow a lot of the powerful features such as inheritance and inclusion of other files and things like that, but maybe not custom functions and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I feel like sometimes there's an argument to be made for reducing a little bit the scope of what can be done in the interest of making sure that what can be done is done more easily and in a way that doesn't overcomplicate things. It's also for portability and for readability. Like if when I look at some of the bigger NFCore pipelines and you see all the different conf files, it's a little daunting. You think like, how am I going to even, you know, wrap my head around what's going on in there? Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's the end game really, is to try and simplify all of that, make it logical, clearer, interoperable. And especially as Nextflow plugins are more and more of a thing, which they weren't in the early days of Nextflow. Mm. Like if you do have stuff in config files, which is code, you can probably put that in a plugin now. So there are alternatives to shipping this stuff.
Yeah.
So that hopefully gives us some alternative kind of approaches.
Yeah, hopefully we can make things progressively more readily usable by people who don't have a full background in programming and all that good stuff.
Absolutely.
It's hard because it's such a wide audience, right? It's a very wide audience of people who have very different kinds of training.
And you want to enable the power users, but not scare off the beginners.
Yes.
You can never make everyone happy for everything, but you know, you want to try and hit the sweet spot.
Yeah, it's the eternal balancing act. But hey, that's what we're here for. Indeed. All right. Well, that was a very nice whirlwind tour of what happened in 2023 and what's coming up in 2024. I personally am very excited. I learned a lot because I feel like every time I do a podcast with you, I'm like, oh, I had no idea that this even existed. So,
yeah.
But we'll be doing more podcasts, regularly on the biweekly cadence going forward.
I was thinking we should do another one in a year's time to look back at this and see how accurate I was about the features that would ship.
Oh yeah, we can do a director's cut commentary where we listen to each other, ourselves talking like, oh, that was wildly off base. All right. Well.
Very quickly, just a timely heads up about this. So we've got a couple of upcoming events on NFCore, which would be nice to sort of share. We have we just announced release dates for the next hackathon, which will be online in March 18th to 20th. And just like March last year, 2023, we're doing local sites. So we're right now, the next couple of weeks, we're really looking for people who have a meeting room that they can book or anything like that to try and get together a bunch of people in person. It worked really, really well last year, so I'm quite excited about trying to do it again. So check that out and add yourselves there if you think you can join in. And if you can't join, you can still join in online. So it primarily will be online. And then along with that, we're also doing another community training. So I think Chris and Marcel will be mostly leading this. March 5th to the 6th, we'll be pushing that out.
That's right.
With updated content. We've been doing quite a lot of work on the foundational training at training.nextflow. Yeah. So.
Indeed. Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's a lot to look forward to. So with that, thank you everyone for joining us for this podcast. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thanks everyone. Cheers. The